Hello, everyone, and welcome to a Friends with Fantasy Benefits Concept podcast. I am Chuck Anderson. I do this show every Monday and try to come up with an interesting concept for us to talk about. And to be honest, this is the first time I've ever come up with a concept that I don't have a good answer to. It's more of a question than a concept. So it works out really good that we have the founding father of FWFB, at least in my head, the founding father. I suppose Mike Warner and some other people have something to say about that. But we have Justin Mason with us today. How is Justin today? You don't actually sound all that tired.
Oh, no, I'm exhausted. And I will say, no, I am the founding father because Mike and Matt joined Friends Fantasy Benefits a little bit after the start. So, and the other two founding members are no longer with us in the podcasting or ownership sense. So, you can call me the founding father for sure.
Nice. And we have Andrew Dewhurst with us, who's been a wonderful steadying influence throughout this season on Mondays. How's Andrew today?
Oh, not too bad. Can't complain.
Is doing this better than the meeting you just got out of?
Yes, but doing this is better than almost any meeting I come out of, unless that meeting involves me getting a raise or a bonus. So,
well, we'll aspire to keep up this level of entertainment value for you. I sort of made this and molded this concept around what I consider to be the trickiest question in fantasy baseball, and we really do end up trying to answer this question the entire drafting season. And the trickiest question to me is, you know, is this player having a career year, or have we discovered a newly established star? And I'm just wondering, off the cuff, what do you think, Justin, is the most important stats that you look for in a hitter or in a pitcher as to if you believe in a breakout?
I think it's a combination of things. Prospect pedigree shouldn't be like weighted super highly, but it's something that I think the industry leans on quite a bit when evaluating, and I think it has its strong points and also some weak points, because there are certain guys that we'll talk about on this list that had zero prospect pedigree, and they may be more legit. I think it's a matter of looking at the metrics, watching the player, and kind of taking every single piece and kind of putting it together and seeing if the story makes sense. It's something you hear people talk about in poker. I've talked about in poker, and that is, you know, when someone is making bets at you, you know, one after another, does the story make sense for you to make the call at the end? And I think that's one of the things you have to kind of look at with these guys is, does every piece of the story make sense for you to label it a breakout or a bust?
Yeah, I mean, I think the poker analogy is good here, because sometimes a story that doesn't really make sense still turns out to work in the favor mm-hmm. of the person who's betting on it. It's certainly not an exact science, I don't believe anyway. And I'm a little confounded by a lot of the players that are on this list, actually. Andrew, how do you feel about this concept? Is there a hitting and a pitching stat that you look to that first and foremost in trying mm-hmm. to guess if these players are for real?
Not as a one-off. I mean, I think trying to boil it down to one stat isn't going to work really well for understanding if what the player has accomplished is legit or if it's more luck-based. I think it is pretty similar to what Justin noted, where it's, you know, you need to... I mean, I think of it as like the math equation. You need to take all the pieces and see if you get the right answer at the end. And if that answer is, you know, a positive of, yes, this looks like it's something that can happen again, or no, this looks like it was incredibly luck driven or even moderately luck driven, that you're able to account for that come draft day when you're doing your own evaluations.
All right. I decided that since this is such a difficult concept today, that I'm going to throw each of you guys a softball question before we start. Justin, are you ready?
Always.
Okay. Is Fernando Rodney a Hall of Fame pitcher? What do you think?
I don't think he is. I think that there aren't many closers that are ever going to make it to the Hall of Fame because for some reason the Baseball Writers of America, for the most part, don't value saves as an important statistic and don't value relief pitchers as an important part of a baseball team, which makes absolutely no sense, especially in today's day and age. I kind of wish he would be, because I'd love to see him accept the honor with a crooked hat.
I'd like to see his statue or whatever with the crooked hat on it too, mm-hmm. Or maybe shooting arrows into the air. All right, so you get a softball question as well, Andrew. Your softball question is: with Gary Sanchez going on the DL, do you think his backup, Mr. Romine, is rosterable in two catcher leagues? What do you think?
Well, I think the answer has to be yes. I mean, catcher is such a wasteland that him simply just, you know, playing in the parks of the AL East, including his own, make him rosterable, provided he's getting enough at bats, which I assume he will be.
And I just want to mention that in a 14-team league, I am winning pretty handily right now, and my two closers are Fernando Rodney and Shane Green. Anyway, which is just tells you that fantasy baseball can be.
Now let's be honest; it's not because of those two closers that you're winning.
Hey, 17 saves from Fernando Rodney, and the Twins have been bad. I think Shane Green has more saves than him, or it's very close, which is just crazy. Okay, well, let's talk about equally confounding things to my closers on a team that's winning. And let's talk about a guy who I think his story just really doesn't make any sense at all. Let's talk about Max Muncy, the first base / third baseman for the ever-surging Los Angeles Dodgers. He has an 18% walk rate with a .271 BABIP. Max Muncy, I would say, I'd just like to say the one thing I've noticed when watching Max Muncy is, oh my God, does he hit the ball hard all the time. Good God. Andrew, do you think Max Muncy is having just a career year, or do we have like a newly established fantasy entity here?
I think what you're seeing right now is what I'm thinking of as maximum Muncy. And I think what we're going to see in the second half is probably more like minimum Muncy. The reason is that while he does hit the ball really hard, he also pulls the ball a lot, like 41% of the time, which means he is going to get killed by the shift along the way. Like it is an under baseball savant. When you look up his WOBA non-shift versus shift, like his non-shift WOBA right now is 449. And his WOBA with the shift is 376, and that's with a 40. That's with him getting shifted 41.8% of the time. I don't see those numbers keeping up. Like, I know the way to beat the shift is to hit it over the shift, but I just don't like those numbers. Always tend to catch up with you, and that you're not going to hit it over the shift all the time. And that's kind of been his path to success so far.
Well, I mean, usually it takes one of the key ingredients is usually it takes an adjustment for these guys to go from non-entities to viable foundations of fantasy baseball teams. That's for sure. And I wonder if, like 6 years ago, if the shift in baseball would have equated to a pitcher that fell off to first base, meaning that they would have the pitcher cover first base on every play and put everyone in left field against Jose Bautista. Anyway, what do you think, Justin? Do you think there's more here to Max Muncy? Do you think he's going to be a highly sought after commodity still come the draft season next year?
Come draft season next year, probably not, because I'm sure there will be a slump coming at some point. And if and when that happens, especially if it happens at trade deadline time, the Dodgers, who are a team that expects to compete for another chance at a World Series, will definitely go and get a piece to fill in for him and kind of bench him. You know, the nice thing about him is that he can play multiple positions. He's got experience at second base, first base, third base. So he can play kind of all over the diamond. So for this year, I think he's going to have some value because he's flexible and the rest of that team is flexible with guys like Cody Bellinger and Justin Turner and Chris Taylor, who can all move around the diamond and a couple of them into the outfield. So it's hard because, in a way, like you said, the story doesn't make a lot of sense as a guy who's kind of come out of nowhere, doesn't have much prospect pedigree. The reason the story makes a little bit of sense is if you go over to FanGraphs, there is a great article by Jeff Sullivan kind of at the top of his player page, which really highlights some swing changes that he's made that's really helped him kind of unleash some of this power. And if you watch these GIFs that Jeff put in there, you see how strong this guy is. And he is just extremely strong. One of the GIFs, he's hitting a home run. I want to say it's off of Vincent Velasquez, where, you know, it's a pitch that should be hit, you know, a long ways, but he pretty much hits it straight with his upper body. Like, there's very little torso movement, and he does hit the ball extremely hard. And one of the things that is really striking from his player profile is the fact his soft contact percentage is only at 12.6%. Now, I doubt that is sustainable long-term, and I think there will be some issues with contact, with balls, you know, falling. I mean, right now he's running a little bit lucky, and I think his true batting average is probably in the 240 range. But that's no longer an average that precludes someone from playing. And the fact that he's got elite strike zone judgment is pretty amazing. Only striking out 24% of the time, he has an 18% walk rate. And that's backed up by things that he's done in the minors before. Only at one stop, and that was a quick 45-game stint in his first go-around in the majors, has he walked less than 12% of the time. So this is a guy that's always walked. He's always gotten on base. And even if the average drops, which I expect it would, I think he's still going to be a valuable player for the Dodgers. I just worry that they may upgrade if the power starts to dissipate a little bit, as I would expect it to.
Well, 15 home runs. I mean, he was like a roster afterthought. I mean, he didn't play to start the year.
I'm sure he is probably less than 5% owned in NFBC draft and hold leagues.
Like,
nobody has this guy. Yeah, no, I had never heard of the guy before. I'll be honest. I mean, prior to this season, he had 96 games played in the major leagues, and I had never heard of him.
Like, when I heard his name first brought up, when he started hitting, I said, Max Muncy, as in, like, the Oakland A's backup guy? Like, mm-hmm. I certainly didn't realize he was a Dodger, and I'm in the smallest minority that sort of knew of his existence. So, I mean, this is the ultimate breakout out of nowhere. Now, let's talk about somebody who's got the opposite pedigree. I think all of us in fantasy baseball that were playing at the time when Dylan Bundy was a prospect remember him as the elite can't-miss pitching prospect, thought of nearly on the kind of status of, you know, Madison Bumgarner as a prospect, not quite Steven Strasburg, because that's a, you know, that's a generational type of talent that we thought of with him. But Dylan Bundy has somehow managed 6 wins and a 3.75 ERA, despite a 15.1% home run to fly ball rate for the Orioles. As much as you can possibly want to invest in an Orioles pitcher, is Dylan Bundy headed towards stardom here? Are we seeing everything start to develop for him, Justin?
I don't think we are. And, I mean, I love the tools. I love the stuff. He still struggles mightily against left-handed hitting. That hasn't gone away. He's currently got a 296, 365, 43 triple slash against lefties this year. He's gotten a little bit better at home than he's been in years past, which is a nice little adjustment. And he has these moments of brilliance. There are times where he, goes out and really shoves, and it's really impressive. and then things completely fall apart for him. So I think he's a guy that is, you know, a usually start kind of guy, but I don't by any chance believe that this is a breakout until I can see that he can get left-handed hitters out.
So you think he's a number three starter for fantasy next year? Or do you think that's even a little ambitious?
I think that sounds, I mean, are we talking about like a 12-team or a 15-team league?
I would say probably 15, most of our listeners probably play in.
Yeah,
most.
I'd say he's probably just outside my top 40, so I'd say he's like a low-end number three kind of guy.
All right, I can see that. Do you like Dylan Bundy's mini breakout here more than Justin, Andrew?
Probably not much more than Justin. I mean, I like his K per nine numbers. I mean, that he's had shown some growth there. I mean, he's over 10 right now, which is really nice from a starter. Obviously, he's got, I guess it's not obvious, but he's got some home run to fly ball problems, which is probably partial to do with just the parks that he pitches in most of the time. But also facing, I guess, the Yankees and the Red Sox isn't going to help that number a whole lot either. But I mean, there's I agree. I think he'd probably be, you know, a third starter in best case. You would probably see a spike in his value should he be moved to a National League team or probably outside of the AL East, because I think a lot of people do hold that AL East bias where they just want to stay away from it. I mean, from his overall profile, he looks like he's largely doing the same thing he did last year. A little less curveball, a little less changeup. But I mean, like his pitch values on Fangraphs are largely negative outside of his slider. So it's just not necessarily a profile right now that looks like it's like there's more here to be had. I think what you're seeing is best case scenario.
I just want to point out real quick before you move away. You would think that the damage that the Yankees and the Red Sox would do to him would be largely responsible for the home runs. But actually, two of the three starts he's had against Boston this year, he hasn't given up a home run, and he hasn't even faced the Yankees at all, which is kind of insane. So that's the maddening part, because, like, you know, he just went up against Atlanta. In Atlanta, you think that would be a really dangerous spot for him. Gave up two earned runs, but no home runs. Struck out eight guys. It's the damage against teams that are really bad that really confound you. You know, obviously the Kansas City start where he didn't even go a third of an inning and gave up seven earned runs hurts him quite a bit. But that's a game you're obviously starting him for. You know, the game against the White Sox, he goes nine innings but still gives up three earned runs. So it's not as useful as one would think. You know, gets, you know, hit up against Toronto, gets hit up, you know, against other, like Miami put the two home runs on him the other day. So it's like, it's not like you can even avoid some of these bad starts with him unless you know that it's a really right-handed lineup. Right-handed lineup. That's right.
Yeah, I mean, he's oddly confounding for a usable pitcher, and he really wasn't drafted all that highly this season. So, I mean, you can't be mad at your overall numbers, but you can sort of be frustrated at how we're getting there. I tend to agree with you guys. I don't think Dylan Bundy is a guy that we can. He also has an injury history, which is what took him so long to develop. So I don't necessarily think he's a guy that we can put a whole lot of trust in going forward. Now let's talk about a player that I really, really liked well before everyone else, and of course this year I don't own him for the first year in the last 3 years, and that's Eddie Rosario. And I want to throw in this random question on these podcasts now, because I think it's a fascinating one. Justin, I want you, before you expound on Eddie Rosario and the massive season that he's having, I want you to tell me off the top of your head what you think Eddie Rosario's ADP will be next year.
I mean, if he keeps up what he's doing right now, I'm going to guess he's a top 60 player, which will be difficult for me to buy in on.
Is it the walk rate? I know that's not his specialty.
The walk rate is concerning, though. I mean, he's made some really nice improvements too. You know, striking out less, and I mean, these are things that he's consistently done. The team construct is concerning to me because, as much as this year so far, he's getting a lot of support in terms of runs and RBIs. I don't know that would continue if the Twins decide to sell off pieces. And I mean, it also depends on what they do with Rosario. Rosario could be an interesting trade chip for them, either right now or in the off season, if they decide to give up. So I don't know. I've never been a huge Rosario guy before he got to the majors, and then he obviously was suspended for PEDs in the minor leagues. It set back his arrival. He does have a lot of prospect pedigree. I don't love guys that don't walk very much, and I think his average is a bit inflated by a really nice BABIP. I do like some of the things I've seen from him, but I think he's probably going to be one of those guys that goes a little bit higher than I'm comfortable taking him.
Yeah, I mean, we have these crashing meteors that are hitting around Minnesota, known as Miguel Sano and Byron Buxton. And I'm just trying to figure out, like, am I wrong? Like, in recent years, we've heard all this talk about Brian, about Dozier getting traded, right? Well, if you invested in this team to try and win this year and they can't catch up with the Tigers in their own division, let alone pretend like they're going to make the playoffs, shouldn't we be talking about Brian Dozier being like automatically traded now? I mean, unless I'm missing something in this story, but I do think team concept is pretty interesting here, and I'm usually the team concept guy. Now, Eddie Rosario has 3.3 WAR this year in 73 games. And I am not a WAR guy, but as far as WAR goes, I mean, I don't think anybody would have ever guessed that he would be on pace for, you know, close to 7 WAR as a player this year. So, I mean, it really has been a huge breakout, and he's helped you in power and stolen bases and all the peripheral numbers. This was not a guy that was drafted as, you know, a number one or even a high-end number two outfielder in most leagues. I mean, I think in smaller leagues, he's probably drafted as like a fourth outfielder in some leagues. So what do you think is going on here, Andrew? And do you agree with 60 as an ADP for Eddie Rosario next year?
Yeah, I can definitely see him going in that 50 to 60 range. I mean, the reason why I own Rosario in one league this year, which basically him and Mike Trout combined are keeping me in the standings, because they both, obviously Trout's Trout, but Rosario's been that good, right? Like 17 home runs, 54 runs, 50 RBI, 6 steals, and hitting .320. It's hard to argue with what you've gotten out of that orange so far. But like, I don't think he's a .320 hitter. I think he's probably closer to a .280 hitter. I mean, I think around 30 home runs is sensible, and maybe 80 runs, 80 RBIs makes sense. So I think he's going to get drafted kind of in that space that Justin Upton went this year. And I think they're pretty similar players in the production that you should expect, just with higher upside on the average from Rosario. So I agree with Justin though. Like, I'm not touching him in that top 60 space. Like, he's the type of player I'd be more interested in closer to the 100 mark.
Yeah, I mean, and as we mentioned before, it's hard to evaluate right now where exactly the Twins are going to be as a team next year, because a lot of their pieces seem to be in massive flux. I mean, we're going to learn a lot about Miguel Sano now that he got sent back to single A. I think we're going to learn a lot about him. Then you know, Byron Buxton, you know, if he doesn't play much this year, I mean, you got to wonder how much they're going to be willing to invest in him, you know, going forward even. So there's some interesting, the Dozier story will go on, and You know, they've added Berríos to their pitching, but, you know, you got to think they're going to lose Lance Lynn. Maybe the Ervin Santana story is over now that his minor injury to start the year has basically quashed his whole season. So I do think the team concept is going to play into what we have. I mean, you could actually see them go from a team that a lot of people liked going into this year to full rebuild mode if the rest of the season doesn't start to turn itself around.
I think one of the issues with Rosario as a whole is, you know, kind of like what we're talking about at the beginning, which is the story doesn't make a ton of sense. And while some people are going to look at this season as building on last season, the underlying metrics don't make a ton of sense. He still swings outside of the zone over 37% of the time. He's making insane outside-of-the-zone contact at 72%. So it's like, how sustainable is that for a guy who has run at about 64-65% O-contact percentage? You know, this is a guy that probably should be striking out more than he is. And so, like Andrew said, I think that that average is going to plummet at some point. Because he probably is like a 270, 280 hitter. That being said, you've already banked these stats. You know, I'm not necessarily saying he's going to be bad. He is hitting the ball extremely hard right now, and he is locked in. And, you know, sometimes guys put together these type of dream seasons, even if it's not necessarily the norm. So I don't even think you necessarily, you know, you can try to sell high on him now. I don't know that you necessarily would get a top 40 player for him. So we might as well just ride it out and see if he can sustain some of it. But, you know, as far as next year is concerned or in keeper leagues, this is definitely a guy that I'm probably fading.
Well, I made my list a little earlier this week than I normally do, and I put one of his Twins teammates, who I'm just going to glean over now, and I'm going to tell you why we're going to gloss right over him. Eduardo Escobar, right, has hit over his 12 current home runs once in his entire professional career, and he started playing in 2006. And part of the reason I'm going to gloss over him is he's 0 for his last 11, and he's battling a wrist injury right now. But just to add to the team concept that's helped Eddie Rosario, I mean, if you could time warp it back and you could say to yourself, okay, at this point in the season, Eduardo Escobar is a top 15 fantasy entity, you would say that they were likely to be winning their division. Mm-hmm. And instead, look at how much they've struggled. I do think, you know, some of the things, you know, are beyond their control.
Well,
the
injuries, and I think part of the reason you would say maybe that wouldn't be true is because in order for Eduardo Escobar to get enough playing time to be ranked that high, I mean, something has gone horribly wrong. And they lost Jorge Polanco. Miguel Sano has been atrocious. Logan Morrison has been hit or miss. He's been very Logan Morrison-esque. You know, they lost Joe Mauer for a little while. Not much has gone right with this team. And that being said, like they've had some surprise performances to allow them to get there. But what happens to a guy like Eduardo Escobar when Jorge Polanco's suspension is up, as it will be fairly soon, and Miguel Sano comes back from the minor leagues, as we, I think, all expect him to do at some point in the near future? You know, what becomes of Eduardo Escobar, who's playing out of his mind with a .349 BABIP, but he's always been a guy who could hit home runs. I mean, we saw him last year get to 21 home runs in under 130 games played. So like, he's a guy who definitely has pop. I just think his true batting average level is probably closer to .240 than it is to .293 we're seeing right now.
Yeah, the other thing I would add to this is when we think about breakouts from some of the Twins hitters right now, who do you think the best starting pitcher is in the AL Central that doesn't play for the Cleveland Indians? Exactly. When the first result is, we probably know what we should expect.
It's got to be Berríos, like, doesn't it?
No. He's talking about that the Twins, like, play against. So
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So on the Tigers, the White Sox, And the Royals. I mean, you would have to say is it Carlos Rodon?
Is it Danny Duffy?
It's definitely like, not Danny Duffy, because all...
Can we answer the question without a question mark?
Yeah. It's probably Michael Fulmer.
To me, it's Fulmer, which is faint praise at best.
Who I like it and has had, you know, just some bad results, even though I think the stuff is still good.
Yikes.
I think we're bound to see some inflation from guys that play these teams a lot in their division, just because the starting pitching and in some cases the bullpen as well is just atrocious.
Yeah,
there's no doubts about that.
I think it's a fair point.
Let's move from the AL Central to the NL East, which has been curious, and the NL East is not short on decent pitching, by and large. But Odubel Herrera plays on the Phillies, who have been supplying a lot of that good pitching this year. Odubel Herrera already has a career high. His career high home runs was 15, and he has 13 right now. So he's obviously going to smash that at some point in the near future. Odubel Herrera is a guy who, and this is another prospect pedigree story. I believe he was a Rule 5 draft pick, out of the Rangers organization at one point. So what do we think about Odubel Herrera? And I mean, he's on pace right now to look like he's a top 10, top 12 outfielder next year. Or is that too crazy high, going too crazy, too fast? What do you think here, Andrew?
I think that's going too crazy, way too fast. We have to remember, it wasn't like the average looks great right now. I think he's going to probably regress closer to his normal, like 280, 285 number. It wasn't that long ago that he was hitting like 360 or something along that line. He's got a 351 BABIP. He's yet to show that number, outside of his 2015. But I think the biggest problem you're going to get from Odubel Herrera is that the counting numbers aren't as good as you want them to be, right? Like, the average is nice, but at the end of the day, if he hits 26 home runs, that's league average, or it's going to be around league average within a few home runs, and you probably get less than 10 steals. So, like, are you going, like, is it that attractive? It probably isn't. When you put it in the context of like stacking all of these players up, because I don't think you can. I wouldn't expect to get more from Herrera than you're getting right now. But probably something similar. Like the power increase looks really nice. I don't know how legit that is. It'd be great to see 25 home runs from him this year, based on what you paid for him, which would have been probably a pick outside of the top 200, I would think. So in all, like, I'm not excited. I wouldn't be taking him as a top 10 outfielder or a top 15 outfielder next year, but if that's something you're looking to buy, I guess I'm not going to be the one to get in your way.
Well, since we're talking about stories here, let's mention, I don't think I've ever seen a player he's like a chameleon. Okay, going into last year, the story was he doesn't walk. Okay, a month and a half into the season, everyone's like, oh my God, Odubel Herrera is walking. Like, his plate discipline's completely increased. Then he turned into a really great average hitter for a while, who suddenly wasn't walking anymore. You know, now this year, we've got this hit streak, and everyone's like, oh, you know, he's so underrated, he makes such great contact, you know, this, that, and everything else, you know, still not walking. Then all of a sudden now, the other day, my wife looks at me and says, is it just me or is Odubel Herrera hitting a home run every single day? Well, where did that come from? Okay, like that's one thing that we didn't think was in his profile. And like I said, he was a prospect for years. I should say he was in the minors for years, long enough for him to end up in the Rule 5 draft. So, you know, even like his hairstyle and stuff, I don't know, it looks kind of like a rabid chia pet or something going crazy right now. I mean, we don't, like, everything's changing about him all the time. He's a very, very difficult player to put your thumb on exactly what he is, because in between some of these runs are some pretty ugly slumps. So what do you think of that depiction, Justin?
I think he's a guy who tends to tinker with things. I'm not probably as enthused as you are, Chuck. I definitely don't think he's a top 20 outfielder for me next season. Part of this average boon is supported by the fact that he hit .343 in the first month of the season, but in both May and June, he's hit .283 and .287, which is much closer to his traditional average, his true talent level. And in the month of June, he's pretty much stopped walking. His walk rate has gone down to 3.3%. And he's becoming the guy we've always known him to be. Now he's gone on this home run tear, which isn't something that we've necessarily seen from him in the past. But this feels just like a guy who's on a little bit of a hot streak, is a little bit locked in, and that's about it. So, rest of the way, maybe hits another 10, to 12 home runs, hits 280, is that, a guy that is a top 20 outfielder, like Andrew said, like a .290 hitter that's hit 25 home runs is valuable, but the fact that he isn't really stealing anymore now that they're batting him third as opposed to first or second puts him in a position where he's not running. It's not a matter of he isn't being successful either. He's 4-for-6. He's not taking off in the same way that we saw earlier in his career, especially in that 2016 breakout season. So I think Odubel is probably one of those guys that has been very underrated in the past, and I've got a lot of shares of him this year because of that. But I think the pendulum will probably swing next season, and he'll be overrated, in my opinion.
All right, well, a lot of these players and the stats that they've accumulated so far lend themselves to an overstatement. So I'm going to start out this next player with an overstatement. The last time we saw a 28-year-old pitcher break out to the extent that we've seen Ross Stripling break out was Corey Kluber. So can you say with certainty that Ross Stripling is not the next Corey Kluber? 1.99 ERA through 72 and a third innings. What in the hell is going on? And Justin, you follow San Francisco, so you have to watch this within your own division. Well, I mean, it's just ridiculous. Like, his bad start equals what you figured his good start was going to be. So what do you think, Justin? Ross Stripling, top 30 starting pitcher next year? I'm taking overstatement today. What do you think?
If he continues doing what he's doing, I it'd be hard not to put him in that general vicinity. I definitely prefer him to Dylan Bundy. It's interesting because the Corey Kluber comp is interesting as a guy who's previously had a bad fastball. The fastball is now playing up considerably because the curveball has taken this big leap forward. I mean, he's not Corey Kluber, so let's stop with that, because that's just not the case. But I think he is somewhat legitimate, and it's hard because the story doesn't make a ton of sense as a guy that was thought of by the Dodgers as probably a back end of the rotation or a bullpen piece. But he's really taken a step forward with the stuff this year. I believe there was a slight mechanical change, and that's really helping. And it's super impressive. I just traded for him, actually, in the Great Fantasy Baseball Invitational. Got him from Tom Pringle for David Peralta and Clayton Richard. And I'm kind of stoked because in my most recent one of my most recent episodes with Paul Spora on Sleeper on the Bus, we talked about our top 50 pitchers, and I put Ross Stripling, I believe, just inside of my top 25 to top 30 rest of the way. So, and that didn't include some injured guys, but I have a lot of faith in Stripling, and I do believe, and I'm going to hope to ride the streak for a little while.
Yeah, wow, the Dodgers are getting just massive, massive returns. I mean, I think he finally gave up 3 earned runs the other day, but he still struck out 9 or 10 guys. So like I said, that's what we thought, like, that's what we thought his upside for a start was. And that's, like, maybe his worst start of the year. So, Andrew, what do you make of this? I mean, Ross Stripling, I mean, this is – Ross Stripling was my Shohei Ohtani replacement in the 3-7. So that's worked out rather well, and I was surprised he was still available there. What do you think, Andrew?
I mean, everything that he's doing right now looks plausible. I mean, he doesn't – nothing in his pro – like, the only thing when I look through his profile that stands out is the left on base percentage at 89%, which, you know, will likely regress. I mean – but it's hard to look at it right now and say, you know, will his ER, like, what will it take for his ERA to creep up to 3, considering it's below 2 right now? I mean, the only concern I would have with Stripling the rest of the way is, like, how many innings is he going to throw? He's never gone over, it looks like, never been over probably 120. Mind you, that being said, if he hits, what, 150, you're going to be pretty satisfied, as that's probably going to be close to league average. So things look like they're pointed in the right direction. Yeah, I mean, you can even make a case to say he's been a little bit unlucky with, like, a 310 BABIP. So, yeah, I mean, if you can get him, and if you can get him at a reasonable cost, by all means, like, I think he's worth going to get.
I mean, there's very few ways to paint his stat line poorly. I mean, you can say his FIP is 0.5, nearly 0.5 higher than his ERA, but his FIP is 2.47. So, I mean, I mean, this is one of those that I never thought. You want to talk about a guy who is probably not taken in very many NFBC leagues? This is a guy. Now, I think the innings concern is definitely very important, and the only thing that I think his future has in common with Corey Kluber is that their breakouts both happened when they were, you know, older than 27. That's probably the only thing that they have in common. But being a Dodger means cuts both ways, I think. I think, you know, they're willing to tinker with 6-man rotations and, you know, strategic 10-day DLs. But I also think that means that they're not going to be very constricted by an innings limit, like a team that was like, oh my gosh, we're protecting, we have to protect this entity because we can't go out and just buy somebody else, you know. Like, so I think you're going to see this cut both ways with him. I don't think they're going to put him on an innings restriction, but I do think that if Justin's Giants and the Rockies keep floundering and the Dodgers eventually run away with this division, you're going to see them
keep
rest
floundering.
Up.
We've won 2 in a row. We're above 500, baby.
Yeah.
And we haven't even gotten back half of a rotation that's still out. You know, I think the thing that protects him, especially from being capped too much innings-wise, and they'll figure out ways to protect him, whether it's, you know, maybe shorten some starts or whether, you know, maybe he gets skipped a time or two. But ultimately what protects him is the fact that the Dodgers can't keep that rotation healthy. And that's a big problem when, you know, you're missing a bunch of guys. It'll be interesting to see what happens with Stripling when Walker Buehler is ready to come back off the DL. And I don't know necessarily when that's supposed to be. I don't believe he's supposed to be out for a ton longer than he already has been. You know, that could add some controversy, or maybe we see the Dodgers go to a 6-man rotation in order to provide extra length and kind of coverage for some of these guys like Rich Hill and Kits Maeda and Alex Wood, who've all been up and down and struggled with injuries this year and in the past.
And in late breaking news to all you fantasy people out there, an organization that thought it was a good idea to invest in Scott Kazmir and Brandon McCarthy has some lingering injury problems in their rotation.
That's an organization that traded away pieces a few years ago because they were too deep in the rotation, and it's you know, you can never be too deep in pitching. I mean, it's just things happen, and you know,
ask the Cardinals right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's just there's no such thing as embarrassment of riches when it comes to pitching.
I just invested in Rich Hill going forward because I think Rich Hill looks really, really good right now.
He was a little shaky in his last start, but in his first start back, he looked really, really good. The mechanics look good, which is, you know, an important thing. But for me, you can't trust the blister issues.
Yeah,
and that's
true.
The scary part with a guy like Rich Hill is he could get rolling and then all of a sudden – you yeah. know, he gets shut down.
Yeah, I mean, it was investing in Rich Hill is always a little bit dangerous. There's no ands, ifs,
but there's no cost
that.
Right now, so that's yeah. the nice part.
Yeah, that's true. I got him for a $0 bid, actually.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's talk about somebody who's widely not available, and we're only going to speak of his future value. Aaron Nola, only 25 years old. You know, he's had kind of an interesting little mini roller coaster at the major league level, meaning everybody loved his stuff and loved his control. And then all of a sudden it went away briefly for the second half of his rookie season. And now people who invested in Aaron Nola in the mid-tier have gotten a huge return on investment. Andrew, it seems like you would be an Aaron Nola guy. He seems like an Andrew Dewhurst kind of player.
Yeah, I like Nola. He's actually a player I don't own any of this year just because I got priced out and I wasn't because he went, I think he was going around like fifth or sixth round of most.
Well, by the end of the draft season, he was going way too high.
Yeah. So like I was somebody who was either grabbing, like I'm the person that took like Max Scherzer in the first round of a lot of drafts. Because of the instability of pitching and wanting to get some guaranteed return, which meant I wasn't jumping back in for a player like Nola a little bit, like a few rounds later. But I mean, everything looks like he kind of is who we want him to be right now. His strikeout numbers are actually down a bit from what they were last year. And if I remember correctly, he went on a big tear in the second half where he struck out like probably 10 or more batters in like four or five straight starts, so maybe there's going to be some progression there in his strikeout still in the second half. But I mean, what he does really well is he limits hard contact. Like hard contact right now just at 27%. He's still, I mean, as noted, he's still striking people out. Like 8.79 is the K per nine is still a very good number for a starter. Doesn't walk a lot of people. And, you know, the reason to be optimistic about Nola is that the Phillies are considerably better than they were last year. I mean, he's got, you know, basically 75% of the wins he got you last year, he already has right now. So, like, there's hope that he could maybe get you to 16 or 17 this year. And that's going to make for a profile that people want to see. That being said, I don't know what this would do for his draft stock next year. Like, I think it maybe legitimizes him as, like, a somewhere between the fourth and sixth round choice. But I don't think it, like, for me, it doesn't improve his stock at all.
All right, Justin, let's approach this with you. We need to use your all-around expertise here. Has Aaron Nola jumped these pitchers in your head? Okay. Has Aaron Nola jumped Zach Greinke?
Yes.
I think so, too. And so, a lot of that might be Greinke. Greinke's, throwing 87 miles an hour is a little frightening. Mm-hmm. I think that's fair. How about let's go higher. Has he jumped Carlos Carrasco?
Yes.
Well, that's a statement. Even though Carrasco is confounding in his own right, let's try and inch up the player ladder here. Has Aaron Nola jumped? Who's the legit person here? Has he jumped Noah Syndergaard?
I don't think he has. But that's really close. And I can make an argument either way based on format and league depth.
Okay, let's put it a different way. Do you think Aaron Nola's a top 12 starting pitcher next year?
I think he will be drafted as such. As long as he finishes the season out healthy and he ends up being a guy who puts up 200 or close to 200 innings and you don't have to see a ton of drop-off at any point, and there's no reason to think there will be any drop-off, so it's really just about health for Aaron Nola. I think he is probably going to be drafted as a top 10 starter next year. I think that is a little scary for me, given his health record. But the skills are there. I mean, everything he's doing is legitimate, and the skills are all lined up. The story makes a ton of sense that this is a 25-year-old that struggled through injuries and has stunted his development a little bit. He took the step last year. He's continuing it this year. Everything makes sense. But the kind of injuries that he's had, especially the back injury, isn't necessarily things that'll disappear completely. I think he's always going to be an injury risk, and especially next season, I will be a little bit wary. Now, if he can do it two straight seasons, then I'll be 2019 or 2020, I'll be all in. But I think I'm going to get priced out, and this year, if it's taught me anything, it's taught me I'm going to be a little bit more careful with my my pitchers in terms of injury risk.
Well, I will say this. I mean, he's going to lose Bryce Harper from his division next year. I mean, there's like a 99.9% chance that he's going to lose Bryce Harper from his division, and that division already has the Marlins and the Mets in it. So,
that's an interesting point, and I'm not going to disagree with you. But the Nationals are still going to be very good next year, even without Bryce Harper.
And the Braves are really good.
And let's be honest, the Mets and the Marlins can't be much worse than they've already been. So you've got to think that improves a little bit. And like you said, the Braves are a team that are only going to get better. So, will the division actually be worse than it's been this year? I don't think it will be. I think it'll be a better division overall.
Yeah, it's probably likely to improve. I mean, the Nationals should lose Daniel Murphy too, I would imagine. Speaking of the Braves, though, let's jump to Ender Inciarte. There's like this underlying theme in recent seasons that guys that we were pretty sure were just kind of speed guys, all of a sudden turn into much more than that. Adam Eaton in recent seasons has been like that. I think the fallen outfielder in Arizona, their center fielder, who I'm losing his name right now. But anyway, there's been a number of these guys that we thought, well, this is just sort of just a base speed guy. This is all this guy is. Then all of a sudden they jump up and they say, whoa, maybe he's a lot more than that. Are you big on Ender Inciarte going forward, Andrew?
I'm not, and I don't see actual much change in the power from him. He's hit 5 home runs, so he'll probably, end up somewhere around what he did last year of, 11. So, NCR is like his steals. I feel like he's been sitting at 20 for like a month now. And I don't profess to have any understanding as to why the steals have suddenly slowed down for him. I don't know if it probably has a lot to do with just his going into a slump and his average dipping significantly, as he's now down to 252. He's a player that I wasn't that interested in coming into the year, because if you're going to buy a guy just for steals, you certainly want to get a whole lot more than 22. And like the 11 home runs isn't helping you when you can get any number of other players that will contribute like 24 and give you at least 10 along the way. So Yeah, so I mean, as far as NCRT goes, he's very similar to me right now to the next player that you want to talk about. And I don't want to jump too far ahead, but I see these guys as being pretty similar, only NCRT having less upside. Like, his average looks like it should come back. He's never really hit this low, batted for this low of an average in the past. So I expect that's going to come back with probably when his BABIP moves itself back into where you'd expect it to be. But this might also be screaming that he's injured, and that's why he doesn't have, that's why you're seeing such a slowdown in the steals and why his BABIP is so low.
Well, I guess I was the one being optimistic here. I think the Braves are kind of an emerging offense, especially if we get from Acuna what we're expecting to get over the next couple years. And I was focusing in a lot on the 281 BABIP because I think with his speed, he's going to have a tendency to be a regular 315, 320 plus BABIP guy over time. You know, and I don't know. Once you get up over 10 home runs, if you can get up over 30 steals, I think that's a speed entity that is going to be highly coveted going forward. But Justin is going to probably help quash my enthusiasm. What do you think?
I completely am. I mean, because aside from the fact that he just had a tremendous March/April, where he hit 276, 320, 319, and stole 13 bases. Since then, he's been god-awful, and he's not even stealing. He's only had 2 stolen bases in the month of June. He had 5 in the month of May, which would be fine, but it's completely slowed down. The Braves have started moving him out of the leadoff spot more often. He's already had almost 30 games between the 6th and 7th slot in the lineup because he's struggling so bad. The Braves are going to start getting other pieces back and promoting pieces. You know, this could, you know, make his stay out of the leadoff spot more permanent once a guy like Ronald Acuna returns from injury, or if they start bringing up guys, or even if they trade for guys. He's an aging player with injury past. I think he's going to be fine rest of the way, but I think people got really excited by the first month of the season when he was just running nonstop and the Braves were running nonstop. And I think they maybe, bought into a little bit of fool's gold in Ender Inciarte. Going to be a fine player, but he's not the player I think that maybe some people expect him to be. And I think next year he will be overinflated because he probably will finish with 30 to 35 stolen bases, and I just don't think that's the guy he is.
Well, interestingly enough, I did not realize that Ender Inciarte was a Rule 5 guy. I didn't know that.
I didn't realize that either.
I tend to think that 2012 Rule 5 draft from the Phillies. And the one thing I'm not going to completely disagree with you guys, because I guess I put him on here thinking that he was not really a true breakout guy. Like, I don't want to go too crazy on him next year. But I would say this. He's under contract through 2021, you know, and conceivably he has an option year after that. So conceivably, I think the Braves are heavily invested in him enough. Not that they won't move him around the lineup, but I think he's going to stay in the lineup.
I agree with you there, too, especially one, because he plays good defense, and two, the contract is really team-friendly.
Yeah.
It'll allow them to keep, once their younger guys get more expensive, to keep them all together, or also allow them to go out and buy someone maybe next off season, and try to bolster that team for maybe a championship run.
Well, I think it's easy to sort of get caught up in what the Braves are doing and assume all of their components are playing pretty well. And the point of the matter is right now Tyler Flowers is really struggling, which matters in deeper leagues for sure. And Ender Inciarte has been scuffling along a little bit. Let's talk about the aforementioned player that Andrew hinted at. Let's talk about Michael Taylor, because you would think that he's got a very legitimate shot to play a prominent role next year, and suddenly he's surging, and he's not the type of player that you would think his plate discipline is going to help him you know, help him sustain some of the gains that he's had so far this year. Justin, where are you on Michael Taylor? And oh my God, has he helped me in the leagues that I have him in with all the steals? He had what, 3 stolen bases in an inning or something, or 3 stolen bases, 4 stolen bases in a game, or 5 or something recently. Talk to me about Michael Taylor. What are you seeing here, Justin?
I think that it's really, I mean, he's just absolutely killing it right now. Over the last 2 weeks, he's hitting 500, 548, 536. I don't know if I've ever seen a triple slash that strange, pretty much ever. 7 stolen bases over that period, and has been caught 3 times. I think that he's obviously not going to keep up this kind of pace. He's not a guy that tends to hit for a very good average, but what he can do is bring back the average as he's been doing from the early season struggles, and he can be very dangerous on the base paths. Now, I think when he eventually goes back into a slump, he's going to lose playing time this year, but like you mentioned, for next year, he could be a very interesting guy because with the departure of Bryce Harper, he should get everyday at-bats in that outfield, and that could be very valuable for fantasy owners, and I think maybe his price will be a little deflated, though I almost wonder if we'll see a Delino DeShields rise, where maybe Taylor starts off a little deflated, and by the end of it, he's overinflated. So that'd be my only fear, just because, I mean, this is a guy who hasn't, had full-time plate appearances all season necessarily. He's already got 23 stolen bases and will probably end the season with close to 40, and those guys are hard to overlook by anyone going in drafts.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of variance within these numbers. I mean, he really was not expected to play regularly even, and that depressed his draft value going into this season. And so he's had sort of some irregular bat at bats early in the season, and you're still looking at a guy who's got 5 home runs and 23 steals. And I think the most fascinating part about him is with him getting 19 home runs in 2017 in only 118 games, is that you're not looking at a guy like Ender Inciarte that you think has a cap of what he could give you, the number of categories he could give you. If everything falls right, I mean, he's got to be considered, what, a 20 to 23 home run possibility next year to go along with the possibility of, dare I say, 50 to 60 stolen bases. And that's going to be pretty enticing. I mean, the other thing that's happening to Taylor now is you're not going to run yourself out of innings with Bryce Harper at the plate. So you got to think that maybe his actual chances to steal go up pretty dramatically next year. Now, that doesn't mean that the Nationals are going to stand pat. They've been a pretty aggressive organization. They're probably going to do what they can to refill the middle of that lineup one way or the other. But I think you're also looking at a team that's got a number of in-house solutions to their problems. So maybe they do spend a year being a running team where Soto and their other young outfielders, Soto, a combination of Soto and Goodwin, and their supposed number one outfielder in their system, supposedly all of those guys will be sort of set free. And it's going to be a fascinating dynamic going forward as to what happens. Andrew, Michael Taylor, you higher on him than Ender Inciarte? I imagine you are.
I am. I mean, and it is from the part you alluded to, in that you could get 20 home runs from him. The Nationals outfield could be really interesting next year if you think of like an outfield that hits like, if you take out Juan Soto, you could have an outfield that hits no home runs and just steals. If they, if they went with Taylor, Goodwin, and Victor Robles, which would be maybe exciting to watch. I'm not sure, but it could also be really boring if you're somebody who likes home runs. But I mean, that's the problem with Taylor, and I think the problem that will continue to be for Taylor going forward is that you're continuing to guess at the playing time. Will the Nationals roster him as a fourth outfielder, or will they maybe move him to try to like add more assets into the farm. Like what's like, it's going to be a bit of a merry-go-round. And I think that's from here, from now moving forward into next year, is that we're just kind of sitting around and saying like, what are they going to do? I mean, it looks like they should be trying to, you know, make that run this year. Hopefully maybe, you know, win a playoff series while they still have Bryce Harper.
And that shouldn't be that hard to do, by the way.
Well, they've proven otherwise. You wouldn't think it would be hard to do with Bryce Harper, Max Scherzer, Steven Strasburg, Daniel Murphy, Anthony Rendon, but they find a way. So, that's ultimately the Nationals' problem right now, is that the outfield is so full, in a good way, right? Like, in that you're not sure what to do with guys like Michael Taylor. It's going to cloud, you know, what we should be doing with Victor Robles this year, and possibly into next year, unless we see some of these players moved. That also being said, they also have all almost entirely struggled to stay healthy, from literally the top down, with Harper and Taylor's been injured this year. Actually, Taylor might be the one that hasn't been injured this year, but Goodwin's been injured. Robles is injured. So it'll be interesting to follow moving forward. I mean, it'll be crazy to see what happens. If he hits 40 or 50 steals this year and ends up in the 15 to 20 home run mark, he'll potentially be the most overdrafted player, because like, if you're willing to pay top 100 prices for Billy Hamilton, wouldn't you be willing to pay a higher price for someone that might actually hit a few home runs?
Yeah, I mean, take some time and fast forward in your head. If they lose Harper and Murphy is hobbling around, then it is on paper, if they don't sign somebody huge, not only do you ask the question, is Matt Adams their cleanup hitter next year? Not only do you ask that question, because, you know, I mean, you'd assume Soto is going to hit higher in the order than that. But then think about the fact that we're talking about all their speed in the outfield, and they have the premier speed guy at shortstop in their lineup, too. I mean, you know, and Rendon is an unbelievable hitter, but he's not a power guy. So you're really, I mean, while you're looking at a really good lineup, you're looking at a really uniquely thumpless lineup. There's no thump to be had there. You know, I don't think anyone's expecting Juan Soto to hit 30 home runs next year, you know. So it's an odd lineup dimension for, you know, right now on paper for a contending team that you know is going to try and contend. And they have their openings around the diamond are not all that apparent. I mean, you got some first base and you got some catcher.
Well, don't forget that I'm pretty sure Daniel Murphy is a free agent after this year. Like you said, Harper is a free agent. Let's see, I believe there's another. Oh, Ryan Madsen and Brandon Kinsler. They're going to have money to spend. Like, this is a team that can go out and spend money and fill those holes. They also have prospects that will be coming up. And, you know, with Harper leaving, they may bring up some of these guys that are ready. You know, Victor Robles will be, hopefully healthy and ready to return. Carter Kieboom should be ready by that point. So, I mean, they've got, you know, some guys who are going to be coming up to fill those holes with money to spend. I wouldn't be too worried about what they've got going on in Washington.
Well, I mean, the other thing is that if they wanted to, they're going to have enough money. Can you imagine if they put Machado in the middle of that lineup and moved Rendon to second, which, you know, is...
Well, I don't think Machado wants to play third base. I don't think that Machado is an answer necessarily for them, but I could easily see them go out and get... a third baseman, move Rendon back over to second, or see them go out and get a first baseman I guess they've got Zimmerman. He's still under contract
I think we're going to see a big change in what this roster looks like by opening day next year. Just because, like, when you look at all of the things you're pointing at, Chuck, with the construction of that roster, it points to a roster that's significant, that's constructed around Bryce Harper. I mean, you take that piece out, you're going to be looking at probably a different roster. And yeah, they've got the pieces. I think you'll probably see them shift things around. You might see a player like Rendon that's moved. Maybe, you know, I don't want to get too far into trade speculation because I'm going to be probably 115% false on it. But I would be pretty surprised if this team looks anywhere close to what it looks like from the hitting side next year by opening day.
Yeah, and I mean, no matter what it looks like, I mean, their players are going to be valued really high. There's going to be a residual effect that their players are going to be valued really high because the organization has done well in for a long stretch of time here. And, you know, we're just used to them being good.
Well, and they still and, will be. Right? They're at worst, probably, even without Harbor, still going to probably be the second best team at worst in that division next year, right?
Even if they didn't add any pieces, I guess all I'm saying is even if they didn't add any pieces, and we all realize they're going to make some adjustments with the money that they have, but even if they didn't add pieces, I still think that they would be drafted really highly just because of us being in the habit of them being as good as they've been in recent years. And, you know, there's going to be a ton of upside. That's what you're pointing to. It wouldn't matter. If they didn't add anybody, there's still a boatload of upside offensively within the roster. You know, and Carter Kaboom is the one I'm, you know, I hate to try and project catchers at the major league level, although he seems to, his prospect status just seems to be growing over time.
Oh, no, you're Carter Kaboom is the second base, or is shortstop second baseman. Spencer Kaboom is his brother, who is a catcher. Spencer being the lesser of the two prospects, Carter being the premier prospect out of those two.
Oh. So the one more likely to Kaboom.
Yes.
Yeah, so I'm bombing. I'm bombing within the bomb right now.
But, I mean, I was just talking to Chris Blessing yesterday, and he thinks that Kaboom could be like a part of a piece to go get. You know, some sort of massive haul at the deadline. So, yeah. I mean, he could be one of those guys that, you know, maybe they do want to go out and get Machado. You know, they can move Trey Turner back over to second, you know, put Daniel Murphy at first base full time, go and get, you know, and the keeper Rendon obviously at third, go get Machado, slot him in at shortstop, trade Kaboom, you know, and then you've got that awesome lineup for the rest of the season.
Well, I will say this. I mean, within this conversation, we've sort of gone to a sub-conversation, obviously, and not to get too far off the rails here, but I just want to mention that I've taken Machado's move to shortstop this year to mean that he was trying to up his free agent status, and I don't think he'll pass up a nickel next year if the difference is playing
I'm
shortstop
sure, right?
Or third base. I mean, that's how I've taken it, which doesn't mean anything. I mean, there is a number of, you know, there's a number of Latin-based players over the years that have, you know, rigidly stuck to wanting to play shortstop. So I'm going to be fascinated, and I'm going to look for the media reports and stuff about what exactly Machado wants to do next year, because that will largely control his value. I think he has slightly more value as a third baseman right now than a shortstop going forward, because shortstop has been amazing.
Well,
you agree or disagree?
I disagree. Shortstop has more of a defensive impact on the team as a whole, and so I think you still spend more on the shortstop, on a premier shortstop, as you do even though the offensive numbers have started to catch up for the position to third base and second base. I think you still spend more money on them because of the defensive prowess. And Machado, especially being 25 years old, I don't think it matters where he plays. He's going to get paid. So someone is going to shell out everything for him.
What do you think about fantasy value, though, going forward? Would you rather have him be a third baseman or a shortstop?
You know, I'd rather him bounce back and forth so I had eligibility both.
I think if I only had one, I would rather have him as a shortstop, in the same sense of, like, you would also rather have Alex Bregman as a shortstop, because the value that he's providing is harder to get from shortstop, right? Like, you can get shortstops that hit for average and give you some steals. You're not going to find a lot of shortstops that hit for 30 home runs, 100 RBIs, and like a solid average along the way.
You're not going to find that as easily at third base anymore either. He's the third ranked third baseman on ESPN's player radar. He's the third ranked shortstop. I think the argument Chuck is making, I think it's correct, is that the difference between the two positions has leveled off.
Yeah, it's vanished almost, which I wasn't expecting either. And some of that is, you know, injuries to third baseman.
I talked about that prior to the season starting.
Yeah, I remember. I've
been talking about that for years, actually, because there's a lot of talent at shortstop coming up through the minor leagues, you know. And Francisco Lindor has matured. Trevor Story has been really good this year. Trey Turner is still a stud. So I think we're, you know, and this is talking about guys, not even including guys like Carlos Correa, who's barely inside the top 10 at shortstop.
Which is a statement, because Carlos Correa is definitely a stud. There's one thing I wanted to mention, and this talk of positional flexibility allows me to do it. Maybe the best thing that Max Muncy has given us this year is the concept that, you know, of moving other players around on that Dodgers team. So maybe, you know, that's going to be a lasting impact as well, because like Cody Bellinger, I will always call him Clay. Cody Bellinger is, you know, going to be outfield eligible next year because of Max Muncy, which, you know, I think is something that's going to have a lasting effect as well. And, you know, that's not the only effect that Muncy has on that. On that lineup, I don't think we're going to see Red turn two back at second base, but he's definitely moving players like Taylor around that, and Kike Hernandez.
Well,
part
of that too is the fact that Corey Seager got hurt, and they need Taylor to play shortstop, and they don't trust Jock Peterson to play full time in the outfield because he still can't hit left-handed pitching. So, I mean, like, don't get me wrong. Like, part of it is Max Muncy. They've got the option. But part of it is, too, just the you know, as much as I love to hate on the Dodgers, that team has been super unlucky. So, I mean.
I like as much as I love to hate on the Dodgers. You know, I didn't mention the fact that the Cubs got swept by the Reds over the weekend yet. So I'm glad that that your hate of the Dodgers can be mirrored by my distaste for the Cubs.
Well, and like one of the things that I don't think we're talking about enough in the grand scheme of things in terms of Major League Baseball right now is just how close all of these divisions are. Like, it's like, this is, you know, people, you know, there've been articles written about how baseball isn't being played very well right now. And, you know, and turnout for stadiums and numbers for TV are down right now. We're going to have a really, really fun second half of the season, especially in the National League, where you've got three teams in each division that have already won 40 games or more.
Yeah. I mean, this is a golden age of parity, somehow or another. And the path that
Which
we've gotten to...
Which is crazy, considering the super teams that have been built.
Yeah, I mean, look at the difference. Like, you knew before the basketball season started last year who was going to play in the NBA Finals. You know, like, without a doubt. And in baseball right now, you've got so much parity within every division. Like, super teams like the Nationals and the Cubs are trying to catch up to teams within their own division. You know, and I think there is a lot to be said for that. And, you know, on top of it, you have for baseball right now, you have a Yankees and Red Sox crazy race in the AL East, which always just emanates throughout baseball and throughout the country. So it is a great time to be watching baseball. And hopefully all of you have used FWFB this year and all the content that we've been putting out as a way for you to keep up on everything that's going on. I certainly do my best to have FWFB be a supplement to other outlets, meaning that we try to cover some players that you're not seeing everywhere else. And I think we do a good job of that. Andrew, why don't you give us your Twitter handle and anything special you're working on, and we'll get Justin to bed here real quick.
Sure, you can find me on Twitter at Andrew K. Dewhurst. Not working on a lot at this moment. Dropped an article last week trying throwing out some ideas as to how I can try to rebuild my TGFBI team. So you can find that up at Friends with Fantasy Benefits, and you'll probably see another article from me in the next week or two.
Justin, I'm just curious, do you know who Spencer Dinwiddie is?
I do not.
All right, I was just wondering, because he's a point guard. You like to give yourself a hard time about the NBA. He's a point guard, a massive rise last year. Anyway, that gets to the point that I'm working on. I'm building up the three-sport league. I got to get out the football details yet today. And that's what I'm doing. I'm Chuck Anderson. I can be reached at Just Chucking It on Twitter. And Justin, now that I've poked the bear a little bit and made fun of you, you can tell us one-tenth of the stuff that you're working on in the fantasy industry. Give us your Twitter handle, and we can get out of here.
You can reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason, FWFB. Right now I am working on an article. It's either going to go up on Fangraphs or Friends of Fantasy Benefits, or maybe I'll do two versions and put them up on one up on each site. It's the halfway point in the Tout head-to-head season. So, I'm kind of doing an article of where I'm at and, kind of profiling what's gone right, what's gone wrong, and doing a little update on that. You can read the rest of the stuff I write over on Fangraphs and Fantasy Alarm, where I write at both spots 4 to 5 days a week. And then hear me on Sleeper in the Bust, on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, on the Friends of Fantasy Benefits podcasts. And I'm sure I'm forgetting stuff, but yeah, that's about it.
Oh, it's a good thing. We probably don't have time for it all, especially since we ran long, but I thought it was a really interesting conversation. So thank you to everyone for that. And just so you know, Spencer Dinwiddie is a net.
All right. That's good to know. I never would have guessed it myself.
God, I hope I'm right now, because the NBA is not exactly my initial forte either, and Dinwiddie came on late in the season last year. Anyway, thanks everyone for the listen. I will be back to you guys on Wednesday. I think the new staff at FWFB has done a great job, and I just want to reach out to them and thank them. They give me a lot of feedback on these shows as well. So give us a review on iTunes. It always helps, and we will hopefully help everyone out there with their playoff pushes and their championship runs going forward. Thank you so much. This is FWFB Concept Podcast signing off.